we recite the seventh commandment as it's written there. The seventh commandment.
You shall not steal.
What does this mean? Are you familiar with the saying, that's for the birds? It's derogatory. Something is not worth considering or unimportant. The seventh commandment is for the birds, seagulls to be specific. I'm not being derogatory, but accurate. In Finding Nemo, the camera pans and you hear, mine, 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 as a flock of seagulls comes into view. But let's not start there. Let's start with the fact that birds are mindful of fences. They fly along them, they roost on them, and nest in the hedges lining them. But the seventh commandment fence does reflect the seagull's incessant mine, 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 because it establishes a distinction between yours and mine. In the army, a soldier bringing back your unit a piece of equipment from another unit would explain it by saying, oh, the army is one big company. That's a communist view of property. Communism has no private property. Socialism has private property, but the means of generating wealth are commonly owned. When God commands, you shall not steal, he says the seagulls are right. I can have something that is mine and not yours. But what of the communism of Acts chapter 6? Quote, all the believers were together and they had everything in common, and they gave to anyone as he had need. This is the communist dictate. From each according to his ability, to each according to his need. Briefly, I can respond by saying, read the rest of the New Testament. You don't find the Acts method used again. Even in Acts, it goes bad quickly. Indirectly, at least, it leads to the death of Ananias and Sapphira. Luther said that the Acts 2 was an exceptional situation that soon ended in poverty and the Gentile Christians having to bail them out. It came to an end with the fall of Jerusalem in 70 AD. This, says Luther, is no example to be followed, but a miracle. Even Marx saw that Christianity was antithetical to communism. His famous remark that religion is the opiate of the people doesn't mean what most think, that religion numbs people's senses and dulls them to reason, dulls their reason. No, because Christianity recognizes the distinction between mine and yours and being content with such things as you have, it opposes the envy, the grasping for more on which revolution depends. Furthermore, private property guards the troubled boundary between the individual and the state. The Fourth Amendment's prohibition against unreasonable searches and seizures flows from the Seventh Commandment's recognition of the right to private property. So, what does the seventh commandment really have to do with us individually? Our large catechism says that we must preach this not to Christians, but chiefly to knaves and scoundrels. And I would add to birds, to seagulls particularly, for they are the most greedy of birds. Don't believe me? Throw crackers up for seagulls. Watch them dip and dive to steal from one another. Try to get a cracker to a particular seagull who's kept on the outside, and it's difficult. Watch how close they will dare come to you whom they fear to get a cracker. They will take it out of your hand. They'll take it out of your very mouth. Mine, 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 their calls seem to say, ginning up a feeding frenzy while drowning out any other thought but mine. And you don't think that's us? Where do you think hoarding comes from? Do you think it's no more malignant than stamp collecting? Where do you think shoplifting of items that a person can easily afford and may not even want comes from? In some sense, Chrysostom, the 4th century church father, saw the lust exposed by the 7th commandment as the worst. He said that of the lust of passion exposed by the 6th commandment, it was planted in us originally for the procreation of children. Anger exposed by the 5th was planted in us originally to avenge wrongs rightly. But the lust for things, not so. Quote, therefore, neither is the passion natural to us. So then, if you are made captive of it, you will suffer so much the more vilest punishment. Only of the sin of covetousness does Paul equate with idolatry. That's because of the iron link forged in our fallen souls between possessions and life, thinking that somehow the latter comes from the former. Is like all the lessons from theology and even mythology about this have taught us nothing. God says, set not your heart on riches, and we respond, what? God says, labor not to be rich, cease from your own understanding about riches, and we hear the wah, 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 wah of adults in Charlie Brown. It's as if Jesus never spoke the parable of the rich fool, who foolishly thought since he had enough riches to live, well, he would, or the rich man who went to hell clothed in purple. It's as if mythology never taught us the foolishness of wishing everything we touch would turn to gold, or of the Tantalus desire standing us in water that receded out of reach when thirsty and below fruit just out of reach when hungry. Even pop culture does not hit home on this score. We don't consider ourselves in dire straits when we're longing for money for nothing. And neither the cash register ring in Pink Floyd's Money, nor the reverberating tone of the song, warning of desiring evermore, none of that rings true to us. What if God punished us for our outright thefts? What if God punished us for getting things in a dishonest way? What if God punished us for failing to help our neighbor improve his possessions and income? What if he punished us the way of the Arab world? Would any of us still have our right hands left? We'd be all marked for life. A missing right hand would be more of a guilty shame than any scarlet letter we could hide. Or what if, like Jean Valjean, God made us galley slaves? 5 years of rowing because we stole a loaf of bread. I wish this did happen, because then we might know his mercy. We don't know his mercy because we do not know our extreme sin. Birds are greedy, especially seagulls. Mama birds are not. Jesus likens his mercy to that of a mama bird that wills to gather her chicks under the safety of her protecting wings. Pelicans were thought to so love their babies that they would peck open their breasts to feed their young. Storks have been known to scoop up water in their bills to put out fire approaching their nesting young, and failing that, to cover them with their wings and die with them. Jesus actually goes one better. He dies in place of us. He's the mama bird in the prairie fire, charred black, whom the farmer kicks over to see chicks running out alive. This is what happens to at least one person in our reading. When given the choice between Barabbas, whom John 18 calls a robber, and Jesus, who is declared innocent by Pilate several times, who's declared innocent by King Herod once, who's declared innocent by God himself through a dream given to Pilate's wife. Even though Jesus is innocent, the leaders of the Old Testament church convinced the crowd to choose the breaker of the 7th commandment instead of Jesus. You know how Seinfeld episodes have a running bit in many of them? Not that there's anything wrong with that. I know you said something, but I don't know what. The close talker, the man hands, the no soup for you. Well, there's a running bit going on here. Barabbas, the robber, is freed, and Jesus is led out to be crucified between two robbers. Then on Easter morning, the risen Jesus is mistaken as having robbed his own tomb. Jesus was innocent of ever breaking the seventh commandment or even thinking about it. We are Barabbas. We deserve to be imprisoned not just in this life, but in eternity for our little thieving thoughts or our big thieving ways. We deserve to be caught red-handed and have our right hand lopped off. Like one of the two thieves on the cross, we know we justly deserve crucifixion. Not only do we deserve the wrath of men, but that of God himself. And you know how Jesus was accused of stealing his own body? Have you ever been wrongly accused of theft? I'll bet you blew up quite indignantly, though not one of us can say we're totally innocent. Jesus was totally innocent. You and I, we're Barabbas. We await death by crucifixion, knowing we deserve it. But what's this? They're coming to your cell and locking the iron gate, but saying, "Go, you are free." You are free for Jesus' sake. The punishment that you fear and deserve rightly is going to be suffered by Jesus. Or you're in an Arab country. They're holding your right hand down on a wooden block. The sword is raised high, and in the next moment, your hand's going to be lopped off. There it will be, your hand on the ground. It will be your hand, but not your hand. You can't look. You turn away, and then someone stays the hand holding the sword moving towards your hand. That someone is Jesus. Stop. Take my hand, not his. Stop, take my hands, my feet, my whole body and soul instead of hers. Don't just nail them to the cross. Send them to the rich man's hell. Put me in the tantalizing place hanging between heaven and earth where I will bear all the divine wrath against sins while shielding sinners under the outstretched wings of my mercy on the cross. We've been mercied. As the bishop mercied the guilty Jean Valjean, sparing him from returning to being a galley slave after being free for but one night. We can only speculate how being mercied changed Barabbas, and Jean Valjean being so incredibly changed is, after all, just a novel. But you, if you really do know your guilt of seeking life from dead mammon, if you really know your guilt of thinking in terms, always in terms of mind, 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 if you really know your guilt of seeing you're justly in jail and your right hand rightly on the chopping block, then you do know real mercy in Jesus' name. Then what you wrongly sought from dead mammon, you will seek from the living God. Then rather than mine, 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 all things will be his, his, his. Then you'll see all things in the right hand of God's righteousness, which is none other than Jesus Christ. All things include your past, your present, your future, your life, your death, your resurrection, your possessions, your property and income, and that of your neighbors too, are all in Jesus' hands. The most famous seagull in American pop culture is Jonathan Livingston Seagull. That book made a big splash in 1970. Basically, it's Zen Buddhism without the Buddha. However, this truism from it applies. The gull sees farthest who flies highest. Go back and watch the seagull scene in Nemo. They're all on the ground, not in the air. And as Simeon and as Simon and Garfunkel saying, a man gets tied up to the ground, he gives the world its saddest sound. That sound would be mine, mine, mine. But flying high by God's grace on the wings of Jesus' cross, you'll see all things are his, his, his. Amen.